This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jin Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of September 23rd. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Saturday night is my buddy Jim Allen. S-A-T-U-R-D-A-Y, night.
Well, I grew up on a city by the bay, but wasn't Bay City.
Oh, surely you roll.
Oh, goodness me. Yeah, that is how I roll.
That is how we rolling tonight. I guess we're rolling like that tonight. So how you doing?
I'm okay. I've been struggling mighty with database stuff and trying to figure out, you know, who throws what pitches to who when.
Mm-hmm.
Which is over the last almost 5 seasons. And database stuff is, my database is really slow. It didn't help that I deleted a bunch of stuff today by accident.
Ooh, I had that happen to me recently as well. So we've been losing data. But dude,
I didn't
don't
do
get sucked
lose
into
data.
The data vortex so that we have to come hunting for you. I have to call Michael Westbay and we have to go searching in the data vortex.
It's not like Tron or anything. No, it's just I had one field that takes forever to calculate because it tells me, I basically want one field in the database for every type of pitch that a pitcher throws in a game to both left-handers and right-handers.
Okay, well, don't suck us into the data vortex
either. So basically, if he throws a fastball and a curveball and he faces left-handers and right-handers, that's 4 fields. But I need one for every single game in a year. And the database calculates about 3 of those fields a second. Okay, which sounds really good, but there's like a million of them.
All right, you're sucking us in.
I'll stop sucking.
Hashtag
I bet you say that to all the listeners. All right, on this week's show.
No, I only say that to Joe Madden when we're chatting.
Okay. On this week's show, we've got Lotte starter Dallas Keuchel. We've got playoff race talk. We go rocking with Rookie. I'm going to name this segment Stop Dragging My Heart Around. And we're going to handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
Okay. So I went to Cebu. Oh, I wrote it down here. I went to Cebu on September 11th and had a chat with midseason pickup Dallas Keuchel of the Lotte Marines. Now, people like to say former this and former that, like a former first round draft pick or a former Cy Young Award winner. And I'm here to correct you people, because once you win those awards or those honors or you're drafted first, that's always your label. You know, it doesn't go away. He is still a Cy Young Award winner. He's the 2015 Cy Young Award winner. He's a World Series champion from 2016. Not a former World Series champion. You win that, it's always there. It's yours. You keep it.
You're
is okay, but he's still not former. He's not
the,
former.
That is the problem. Yeah,
I understand. I understand your tweak there.
Okay, we got our articles down.
articles down. Articles up. You got to get them up online. Now, I must have blacked Trevor Bauer out of my memory banks because he was a Cy Young Award winner who pitched in NPB. So you'll hear me ask a question and phrase it the way that I do in this interview, saying that I can't remember one. I can't remember a Cy Young winner pitching in Japan. But yeah, there was one very recently. I just, for some reason, doesn't pop up. Wonder why. So, but I did look up before Trevor Bauer to see if there was another Cy Young Award winner, previous winner of the award in Japan, and I found one.
Okay.
Don Newcomb.
All right.
1962.
Right. Yeah, the Nuke. What a wonderful gentleman he was.
Right. Was a Cy Young Award winner who pitched in Japan. So these are the three. All right.
And Don Newcomb, however, didn't pitch. I think he pitched in one. He pitched in about one game, but basically he came as a hitter.
Okay. Yeah, well, but he was here. But yeah, you're
he
saying
was here. He was here with the Chinichi. Yes.
Yeah, he didn't pitch. Okay, so those are basically the guys. So that's cool. And the other night when Keiko was pitching against the Eagles up in Sendai, I think he got squeezed like a wedding night body part or something because the umpire wasn't giving him some balls that were strikes, and you could see him kind of getting frustrated and not knowing was the pitch up, was it outside, what are you calling here? And anyway, he's a big time pitcher. He's a 5-time Gold Glove winner, 3-time All Star. He's with the Marines now, so let's hear what Dallas had to say. We're standing here with Dallas Keuchel of the Motte Marines. How's that sound?
Sounds a little weird, but it still has a little ring to it.
All right. Now, how did you end up here in MPB?
Well, that's a good question. That's a good question. I don't know. To be honest with you, I kind of just felt the need for a refresher. I wasn't happy with how I had been performing in Major League Baseball. I think I kind of got the short end of the stick with the Brewers, and push comes to shove. I just said screw it. Let's go try to win a MPB title. There had been some chatter from Manabu, who's the head of scouting here, international scouting, and so far he's a great guy. He really wanted me, so he was hitting my agency up constantly. And one of the guys does international stuff, and at first I kind of brushed it off, but I just kind of felt like it was a good time to maybe travel and compete and do a little both.
All right. So now I don't remember a Cy Young winner or a one-time Cy Young winner coming to Japan to pitch. So how much, I don't know, street cred do you get with that, among your teammates?
They've noticed quite a bit, and they're great. I think they're more enthralled with my Gold Gloves than the Cy Young. So, it's a great group, and I'm glad to be over here. But yeah, it's definitely had its perks a little bit.
Now, you seem to be working on the big league rest style. Seemed like 4 days rest. How did you manage to do that?
Well,
negotiation.
I didn't necessarily ask for it. I just said, hey, like, I'm coming over here and I'm trying to help this team win. I'm not trying to take anybody's spot. I said I just want to do my part, and my part is, 4 days or 5 days rest. I'm not going to pitch once a week because to me, if I'm to return to the major leagues, my body wouldn't be doing any good resting for 6 days. Under certain circumstances, sometimes you rest for 6 days in Major League Baseball, but
with an off day,
for the most part, you're 4 days rest or 5 days rest, and I felt like I had a lot of mileage left to throw this year, and that was part of it.
How do you adjust to being dropped into a playoff race like you are here in a foreign country where the baseball is different?
Yeah, that's also a good question because I played catch. I'd played catch with the MPB ball for maybe 5 days, 6 days before I got over here.
I love these stories.
And it's still taking a little bit of getting used to the bullpens, the actual work in between the starts is kind of where I have to adjust my reasoning and kind of numbers, because I have a lot higher vert on my sinker than I do in the game, and a lot more vert than I do in the States, just with kind of the Major League Baseball. I've come to realize that goes down where I like it in the game here.
Okay.
In MPB. So that's very nice, but there's still some random like high verted sinkers and changeups that just happen because of elements that you're in and the baseball that you're throwing. So I've been fortunate, outside of two home runs the other day, two solos, I think the ball's been cooperating with me as much as possible.
I heard a player before he was basketball, he says, I have to have a really good relationship with the ball.
yeah, there's some, you just get used to the baseball I've been throwing for 15 years, and you know, you put something else in your hands with a little bit of tack, it just becomes foreign to you, and you kind of question, you know, what you're doing and how you're even doing it.
Sure.
Or how you're manipulating the ball. So that's something that I combat with myself every day. But it's always been a love-hate relationship, and you know, until I retire, I think it's always going to be that way.
No matter what game you're talking about, that's the way it is. The golf ball, the football. Yep. Speaking of footballs, you've got a football tucked under your left arm there. What are you doing with that? I've never seen that before.
Yeah, I like to play catch with the football. I think as I've come over here, there's not as much space to do your own thing with, in terms of warming up
pre-game
and your own routine. Mm-hmm. I've had to kind of figure out what I can do. This has been my routine for quite a few years now. I just, in Major League Baseball, I usually have room to throw inside, so nobody sees me outside. Here, I have to throw outside because there's literally no space inside. And, you know, that's fine. I get my sweat and I get my workout in, but it's good for the shoulder. I think it's good for my arm to just do something else other than just throw a baseball. And I've been doing that for quite a while now.
Okay.
So it's just something.
All right, so now the team is firmly in third place right now. There's still a couple weeks to go. But you're gathering information. You got to mix in gathering information on opponents. You got to read swings. You got to adjust to Japanese baseball while trying to win games. How do you do all that?
Another good one. I mean, I've always enjoyed the thrill of blind competing and competing with information. And I think they kind of they correlate sometimes. Sometimes they don't correlate. A lot of the Major League Baseball game is just information brought to you along with your strengths and your weaknesses. And, you know, everybody has weaknesses, everybody has strengths. That's what makes the best game in the world the best game in the world in baseball. And it's the same thing here. Probably the consistency of Major League players just make them the best, you know, overall. Mm-hmm. But I think there's guys here that are very good at what they do. And my job is to get them out. So it's no different, and that's what I had to break it down to. But first go around, I think I have an advantage. And I think that's always the advantage for pitchers, especially with a guy who sinks the ball instead of has high ride and four seam. So I tell myself that going into games when I know the scouting report, but I don't know what the guy is willing to do. And so that's been nice, kind of weary at times, but that's also the in-game competition and scouting report just outside of the blind competition. So that then takes over as well.
Kind of hit and miss, if you will.
Yes.
Literally.
Yes.
All right. So how much are you still transforming into the Japanese version of yourself?
I don't necessarily think there's a Japanese version in me. To be honest with you, I mean... guys can really spin the ball here. My gift has always been commands, and I've always had a good two-seam. I think that really transformed my game when I got consistent in Major League Baseball. I don't know. I mean, I might have a game here or there where I can spin breaking ball and throw change-ups and have that more than 50% of the time, but I don't think in the grand scheme of things that's going to make me a pitcher who I wasn't before. Mm-hmm. I think the fastball to me in any game and command of it is always going to get you to where you want to go.
Right.
In terms of a career, in terms of a whole season. And
Reed?
Yeah. And I think that's always going to be me.
All right, now, you've seen Doki Sasaki a few times now. You've worked out with him, I suppose. What do you see in his arm that I guess impresses you?
Well, the talent level is there, obviously, and I think I was expecting kind of the same. I wasn't not expecting anything here. There's a lot of talented pitchers, to be honest with you, on our staff. Roki stands out a lot. I think his stature is major league build. You know, being 6'3" or whatever his centimeters are.
Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever, how they do that.
I haven't stood next to him, but yeah, I think he's 6'5", but yeah.
But, I mean, he's got really good stuff. I think a lot of the transition is just mental, because you're going to a different element. You're young. You're impressionable. So I think if he just hones that in, I think he's gonna be just fine. The couple of guys before him recently have done a tremendous job. So it's not like it's just hit or miss now with some of these guys. I think the transition has probably gotten a lot easier because of some of the technology and competition that they face here. I think the biggest competition, though, is just going 4 days rest in the States.
Sure, yeah.
That's a big toll on your body, I think, in the course of a season, is instead of 6 days rest, it's 4 or 5 days rest. So you're gathering maybe another 7 to 10 starts.
Yeah, and what we've seen since the day, except for Hideo Nomo, most of the guys who go over there have elbow trouble, but they never had it here before.
Yes.
Maybe the exception of a couple guys.
Yeah. I mean, that, I don't know, maybe genetics and a lot of the compounding issues.
Different.
Yeah, maybe different, ball different. But, you know, knock on wood, I think a lot of mine is just less power in the movement, so maybe there's less stress on my ligaments.
I'll scratch that from the record.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not old yet. All right, appreciate your time, Jim.
All right, so more vert on the sinkers in practice, but not on the mound during games. But well, what stood out for you after you listened to Dallas Keuchel?
Well, I'm trying to think of a superlative, but I was really into that, into his answer. This is a guy I could have a real conversation with about baseball.
Mm.
Because he's talking about all the things that I try to describe when I'm having conversations with scouts.
Or when you're getting close to that data vortex and getting sucked in.
That's not a different thing. But talking about movement on pitches, and I thought, this conversation could have gone on for a long, long time if it was if that was a possibility.
Mm.
Because, you know, what, of course, so much of it is just, some of it is just standard stuff. You know, the game is what it is, and I'm here the way I am, and the team, the players, the teammates are great. But when you get past that, it was just a well-packaged bundle of information.
Mm.
I will say that, the footballs, I think, is a thing that Tom House did. I think he started that when he was a pitching coach in MLB. And he was a pitching coach also for the Lotte Marines. So I used to talk with Tom about stuff like that when he was here 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so the vert was interesting, and yeah, so getting used to the feel of the ball was really cool.
He
described it. But more than that, it was, and I did love the question about, why are you on shorter rest than everybody? And I wish I knew the answer. We still don't know the answer. We know that it wasn't something he demanded, but it was kind of something that he sounds like he demanded.
Yeah, I didn't demand it, but I needed. I think that there was nothing that didn't say when they signed that he asked if he could pitch, he could stay on a regular rotation, which is what he told us, because he said,
right,
because that was going to be one of my questions, or how long are you planning to be out in Japan, and what does this mean for you? And he said, compete and travel.
Mm.
Meaning I'm planning to go home and I want to stay on 4 days rest, because I don't want to get off on, get my body used to something different, because I'm going back home. So I didn't even, I nixed that question from my list. Because we got our answer, but yeah,
right.
got that.
So got that, and then I guess the really interesting thing, besides a lot of the technical details, which of course I was eating up and talking about his sinker and his fastball. I think he didn't throw a four-seam fastball until about his third game. Like 60% two-seamers.
Okay.
So anyway, I find that was really interesting. I know the two-seamer is a really, is a tough pitch in Japan for right-handed batters for reasons we've talked about ad nauseum, or the reasons. But so he seems to be really enjoying that one, how that works here. Of course, some of it has to do with how large you are, and he's a big guy. And some of it has to do with your skill level and the firmness of the mound. And Lotte's mound is, I hear, quite good. So maybe that's, you know, he's in the right place at the right time. And so that was interesting. The tackier ball is interesting, you know, and how does he deal with that? The other thing that got me was, you know, the differences in the ball. Question what you're doing and how you're doing it. You know, I just love that because this is so much, you know, it's, you know, it's the same game, but because people play it differently, you have to, you know, you have to read a little bit of reading swings is not only reading swings, but reading intent. And Japanese batters don't always go up with the same intent that you see in MLB. There's just as much variety, but there's probably more, there's more slap hitting buckets, variety of slap hitting buckets here, which is a fairly small one in MLB. So you've got to get used to that, but you know, it sounds like really fun. And the other thing, well, that's really fun, but the whole thing about adjusting to tuning what you're trying to do without getting away from what you really need to do. It's so easy to give up on things that are your core skills sometimes. I see batters do that all the time. If they're hunting fastballs in America, they come over here and they hunt fastballs. And then when they realize they can't, they try to do something that isn't what they can do. And then they go down rabbit holes. And I see that a lot. So you gotta keep one foot grounded and while you're feeling around with the other while you're feeling around the other one, careful not to step on any landmines, but looking for that place to plant your foot.
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So
who was the batter you said years ago said his foot wasn't where he thought it was?
Oh yeah. Well, okay, yeah. That has happened. And I'm surprised that I still hear similar answers, although that one was strange because I know Ichiro Suzuki actually said he went through about 2 months without realizing his foot wasn't where one of his feet wasn't where it was supposed to be. He'd moved it up or something.
Dude, is that the end of your leg?
Yeah. I should have thought about telling him. It saved him a lot of trouble.
It's right there, man. Or else it's, you know, that was kicking somebody in the backside. But
no, it was 2000, and he basically somehow or other, whether he was wearing different cleats or the texture, the batter's ball, somehow like the lines had been painted thinner or something. You know, there was something in his reference point that had been slightly off. And it wasn't until it's like something happened that made him realize. And I mean, that was probably a difference of a couple of like a centimeter or something.
All right. I didn't mean you to go off on this tangent right here, but
I'm saying, but that, you know, that's for Ichiro Suzuki. I mean, it even happened to him. I mean, not Makoto Shiozaki, who
said
8 years after he turned pro that he didn't know his batting stance was different from when he was an amateur.
Well, but that's not the way you said that he phrased it. You said he didn't know where his foot was.
Yeah, but that was the point. It was not where he thought it was for 8 years. Oh, my. Gotcha. And suddenly became a three hitter instead of a 240 hitter. Okay. Anyway, so yeah, that is such a hard thing to make those adjustments. And I really enjoyed listening to him to discuss all those little questioning what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, I must say it was really fun. And obviously he's a big name guy coming over to Japan. So, and I've talked to big name pitchers and players before. That was no big deal for me, but he was very cordial. I was able to talk to him before he went out to do the outfield work and said, "Do you have 5 minutes for me?" He said, "Sure." And he came back and he looked for me. And we stood in front of the bench on the visitor side, and I went on to the field. I don't know if I'm allowed, but I said, you know what, if I'm not allowed, they'll kick us off. So because I didn't want him to come down into the camera well, because that was just too much. It was too hot down there anyway.
Mm.
So we're standing there, and like I said, he has a football, which I really haven't seen a football up close in so long. So it was weird to just be in the same area with a football, an American football. And he has it tucked under his arm as we're talking. And a couple of things struck me is as we're talking, I ask question after question, and he starts off by saying, "Good question," saying again, "That's another good question," laughing, saying, "That's another good question." And I kept thinking, well, these are just typical questions that we would ask. Probably what has happened is since he has come to Japan, he has been asked very, if not non-questions, very poorly worded questions, and information-seeking questions, if you know what I mean. Those just kind of perfunctory questions that don't really do anything.
Well, so we also have a subset of a different, we have a different viewpoint and a target.
We, like, meaning JPW,
you and I.
Okay, yeah. Or the foreign press in general, but yes.
Yeah. But we talk to so many of these guys who go through the same experience. We've been there, done that. And so we tend to, how are you is really not the big question. It's like, how are you adjusting to A, B, and C, and how are you dealing with this individual person? And it's,
agreed.
I don't say we know everything, but we've been around the block.
And we're not with the everyday, because if you're following them every day, you have to think different things.
Then you've got to go, geez, how was the weather today?
Or how was your workout? Or,
yeah,
something else silly. I don't know. Anyway, yep. So that was interesting. And I really like him talking about the detail of that gives you, I guess, as a listener, as an observer, you understand how precise these athletes really are. And when he starts talking about the ball feels different, the mounds are different, and things don't seem right when I'm in the bullpen, but when I get on the mound in the game and I'm competing, things turn, the vertical is fine. The pitches are doing what I want them to do. Again, he had a rough start the other day, but I attribute that to the umpire just as much as maybe he didn't have the kind of command that he wanted to have that day. He still wasn't bad. It was just the result wasn't good. Hit his spots. I think he threw the ball where he wanted to. And if you don't get the call, you don't get the call. So that's,
yeah, it is tricky. It is tricky getting called strikes on so much of it. And I'm not even going to cast aspersions on the umpire, because part of it is the umpire. I know, what a shock.
Stop now.
But yeah, please let me go for a moment. Part of it is that the umpire is working from his data set that says your control is an issue, or your control is not an issue. Those are buttons that he has to set.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if you're a guy like Carter, and I'll specifically mention like Carter Stewart Jr., who has had frequent control problems in the past, and who someday his control is not good, then you're not going to get borderline strikes. And I saw that in his game the other day against the Nippon Ham Fighters, in which basically, through five innings, the only borderline strike he got was against Ariel Martinez. Everything else was a ball. I'm going, And, so his control could have been sharper. Yes. But I don't think he's losing that game if the umpire was actually calling the strike zone. Because he got, you know, basically he got whacked when he got behind in counts all the time.
And it was one inning that he had trouble that he gave up runs. It wasn't like
a problem. Right, the but it was, you know, the walks innings. And the walks and the extra pitches and all that was due to him, you know, throwing the ball where he wanted it and not getting a strike.
Right.
So yeah. But part of that is the umpire, you know, is that the umpires have that button and he has to make them, you know, he has to prove to them that they need to reevaluate him. It can't, and it's not something that can happen in one game.
Dallas, you're saying?
No, pitchers in general, but pitchers in this case was Carter Stewart Jr. But yeah.
Oh, okay. So yeah, in terms of, and what Dallas was saying about just the precision that's required and everything, just reminded me again that at this level, at high level sports in any particular sport, it's really not a game because you have the physical ability and the talent with the athletes, but then there's strategy, there's preparation, there's compete level when it goes out, it's confidence. It all matters and it all plays a role in the wins and losses. And we just tend to focus on the ability and we see these guys do incredible things. But again, you need the combination of all that. The coaches participate, they contribute with the mental side as well as the preparation side and the strategic side and all those things, getting these guys ready. So that was interesting for me. And it, again, great to talk to a one-time Cy Young winner and a World Series champion to boot. So no matter how they might have gotten it, they won the World Series and that's that. So he's a World Series champion. So that was awesome. That was awesome to go out there.
It was indeed awesome.
He was cordial. I really enjoyed it. All right, so let's talk about the league races. I guess we will start in the Pacific League since there's really not much to talk about. We're just waiting. We're counting down here as the Hawks move toward this championship the first time in what? It's going to be 3 years because they had back-to-back championships by the Oryx Buffaloes who are having an unlucky down season, but they're still talented. They're coming back in this game that we have on right now, so you get a time of when we're doing the recording of the show.
Yeah, came back in the ninth inning to win it.
And yeah, here they are. I'm still behind. I'm watching on my player, so.
Oh, I apologize.
That's all right. I did
just spoiler alert.
Scored it, made it 1-1 in the ninth inning, and I'm figuring Seiji Tanaka, he was bound to blow up sooner or later, so he's having a blow up. But anyway, we're just waiting for the Hawks to get this magic number down to zero and watch them party. And the Fighters, they're going to go to the playoffs, so there's no drama on this side in terms of those two teams. But we do have a little bit of drama with the Eagles and with the Lotte Marines. And the Eagles, unfortunately for them, were on the wrong side of a walk-off game tonight, and they lost to the Hawks. But and the Marines are blowing out, the Lions. No surprise there, but. You know, they let this thing get down to where it's really serious that the Eagles could surpass them, and they have more games left. After tonight, I think the Marines are going to have 8 games left, and the Eagles will have more than 10. So they're going to have an opportunity to, while the Marines are sitting around watching TV, the Eagles might be playing for a chance to go to get to third place and play in the postseason. So we'll see how that, we'll keep our eyes on that. But as far as the drama, it changes daily. What do you have to say about the Pacific League?
Not much, except that when you talk to Dallas, they were in third place. And then they were, I think, not where the Eagles were in third place.
I talked to Dallas. Yeah, they were comfortably in third place, and then they lost a few, and then they lost.
And for one day,
whole series to Rakuten up there in Sendai, so they didn't do very well at all. If they just win one of those games, they hold on to a 2-game lead and escape.
So no, that's been pretty good. They're not, obviously they're looking backward more than forward.
Yep, and they better
looking over their shoulders.
Yeah, it's very uncomfortable, but I've talked to some of the players already about being in these tight playoff races, and they say, look, there's nothing you can do but go out and play your game and do the best you can in your game, and that should be your focus. And yeah, they give us all that. I mean, it's true. It's not that it's not true.
Right.
I did talk to one player on the record about it. I'm not sure that I talked to everybody off the record about it, but yeah, you got to go out and do your best on that particular day and try to get the win. So I understand that.
Yeah. All right. You can't win more than one game at a day. So at a time on a day. So.
And no you point. Can't make the other teams lose when you're not playing them. So.
Correct.
All right. In the Central League, though, things are. The carp are swimming in a pond filled with their own mess because, to put it nicely, and I tried to put it nicely, and they did win today. They came back against the Giants and won that game. They did a thing on Pro Yaku News trying to look into a breakdown why the carp have gone bad. They showed a graphic that said none of the starters has won a game recently or in the month of, I don't know, the past nine or something like that. They're all 0-9 combined.
Well, surprise, surprise, they haven't scored any runs.
But I said it at the All-Star break. I'm not sure if you're going to remember, but I did mention that some teams that were surviving and staying in the race because of their pitching would start to fall back. And I thought it would be earlier than this. But I do count the Carp in that.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Teams. It's not just the pitching. The pitching and defense. Their defense has been quite good.
Well, again, but I specifically, and this is what has been happening. I guess it has been happening with the defense too, because we'll get to that. But they won today, so I made it a loss. So with their win today, they're 4-14 over this past recent stretch of 18 games, and. Yes, the pitching has not been good. The starters have not been good. They've been giving up runs early, whether it's multiple runs early or just one, but then another one a few innings later and then another one later, and then they have to go to the bullpen because the starter has blown himself up, and then the bullpen doesn't hang on, and the bullpen has pitched so many innings, those guys are tired, and then you've got Yoji Kuribayashi doing his thing in the ninth inning, getting his freak on.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, he's ready for Halloween. He's scaring people.
So, yeah, it has not been pretty. And then to get to the defensive part, even the middle of the infield, perhaps the best middle infield duo in NPB, and Masaya Yano and Ryosuke Kikuchi, they're out there looking like Kylian Mbappe kicking the ball around so much. So, I don't know if they're tired too, and they shouldn't be because neither one of them really had played extra amount of innings or anything. One of the guys is 30 something, but I don't know what's going on out there to have those guys not play well in the middle of the infield, and they've looked bad. I would love to say that they've just looked, you know, they've made a couple mistakes here and there, looking at the wrong thing, trying to tag a guy when they just should take the one out or do the Shugo Maki today when all he had to do is step and throw the ball to home plate and he threw a wild pitch essentially from second base and cost them an out, and that made the tying run and they end up losing the game because in extra innings because they gave up that run. But I mean, make the simple plays, and I know these guys are professional and they always make it look easy. And I think it was Tony Barnett, former Swallows pitcher, there's the proper use of former, and he said, look, you just make the routine plays. Nobody's asking you to make great plays. Just make the routine ones. The other ones, you know, nobody really makes those plays consistently. So nobody's going to blame you about those. But when you see these guys like Yano and Kikuchi not making these plays and throwing the ball around, that scares me. I don't even know how to process that.
I think it's a matter of putting everything on their shoulders and thinking way too much. I mean, it's so easy to do that. I mean, it's so easy when you think, man, we're just, you know, we're not scoring runs, everything's going to be tight, and start thinking of ways that games go. You know, this is just psychobabble on my part, but I think
it is because I love that you're. I want to be giving them this excuse, but I can't. Because...
No, I don't think. I think it's the stress. I think it, and it's not the stress of, you know, it is a stressful game, and the expectations of the fans are high. And I think Hiroshima feels it. I think, you know, I have a feeling about teams and their fans, and probably with the exception of even more than Lotte, because Lotte has great fans, but it's not a regional thing. You know, it's not like, oh, everybody in Chiba is a Lotte fan.
Okay.
In Hiroshima, it's real.
Yeah.
You know, that love for the carp is real. And they don't want to, you know, they don't want to disappoint them. They, of course, they got to, you know, take care of their job and their professionals, but it's tough, you know,
and they're not a
high powered team. You know, the flip side of that, you know, it's the, you know, and again, we're talking about not extreme plays, you know, they're not trying to do crazy stuff, which is what you see when typically see when players try to do too much, you know, they're trying to, you know, they're chasing balls a foot out of the zone because they got to get a hit.
Yeah, I hear you.
But I think there's something to that, that it's, you know, it's kind of a little bit of a breakdown. And, you know, and we see that players with good skills, but suddenly, you know, you wonder where their heads are. I mean, we're used to some of those players normally, but the whole defense now. And on the other hand, you've got Shota Suikani going leaping around like he took ballet lessons in the off season.
Hashtag
high.
You know, he's got these. He's made. I swear, I've watched a half dozen carp games in the last 2 weeks, and it's like every time I'm thinking, man, there's no way he's gonna. What is this guy? This kind of chubby. Chubby, he's not slow. I mean, he could run, he could lap me going around the bases a couple times, but he's not fast. He's not fast by any professional baseball use of the word. And he is kind of chubby and kind of stocky, but he's got it in him. He's got some springs. He's made some remarkable catches on balls I didn't think he really should be catching, but it seems the rest of the team is just struggling.
Yeah. Well, so every day, this was a day the Carp lost and the Bay Stars were losing, and the Bay Stars had third place for, I don't know, 24 hours, and they were in a playoff position, and then they come out and kind of lay an egg today early on, but they come back and they get the lead and it looks like they're on their way to winning a game and they just blow it. And again, it's just not making plays. You know, it's not that they didn't score enough. It's not that they didn't pitch well enough per se. They just don't make the plays when they're wearing the leather. And whether it's throwing the ball away at Tokyo Dome to allow some runs to score and then end up losing those games, or today just a simple step and throw toward the plate and they throw the ball offline.
Yeah, so Hiroshima's going back into third place.
So, but that fight is going to be fun to watch, and so we'll be talking about that. But let's move along here. We'll go rocking with Roki, make a four-seam transition, and he did pitch on Sunday. He's scheduled to pitch tomorrow, Sunday, here in Japan again. And this one was pretty, I didn't see all of it. He went six innings. He lost. He allowed four runs, three earned on five hits, a couple walks, four strikeouts, and like I said, a big fat L he took home from the Lions, who beat him up pretty good with, you know, the hits, well, five hits. And
well, Tatsumi was a better pitcher on the day. And I watched that game and I thought, because I, you know, if I'm at work, I got to watch every Roki Sasaki game because you think this might be news. And after watching about two innings, I thought, there's no way in heck I'm writing about this game. He's just atrocious.
Right.
He didn't have, his command was horrible. And then as he does sometimes, you know, the switch flips and people were talking about what a good game he had that he took the loss in. And he was pretty good after the second inning. And I'm going, boy, I didn't
after
see the guy at the start of third inning, whatever inning it was. But I just got frustrated. I'm saying, I'm going to write about the Hawks, you know, the Hawks and Fighters or something or whatever. Whatever game is going on has got to be better than this. He's a non-story today. And turned out, and then I looked at his sort of some of the analytics on that. And I went, actually, overall, his stuff was good, but he was not, and the Marines really didn't have nothing going for him that day.
Right. And so I did get to see him up close and personal on the 11th when I went out there to talk to Dallas. He was walking, I would say, not smoothly, not gingerly or anything like that. What's that?
I said not gingerly.
Not gingerly, just not smoothly. So he wasn't moving the right, like I'd like to see a guy who's young and trying to work his way up and through to the major leagues and that kind of thing. He didn't look like that dominant athlete. He just looked like something was bothering him. I couldn't identify it. Like I said, I've never studied kinesiology, but I have a good sense of, I see movement really well and I understand it really well. I don't know what was wrong with him, but it didn't look great to me.
So, okay. So there was an alarm bell ringing there. Your spidey sense.
My spidey sense was tingling. No alarm bells ringing. Yeah, it wasn't that bad. Okay. But whatever's bothering him, we'll see tomorrow if he can right that ship and pitch a little bit better tomorrow. But yeah, I was not impressed with this one. And he escaped without doing too much. So too much damage. let's make a two-seam transition and quickly talk about Shohei Ohtani. And obviously, 50-50. Is he going for 60-60? I don't know. I'm not going to put anything past him, but he got that this week. We don't like to talk about the guys when we let them graduate and move on to the major leagues, but the things that he is doing, we just have to talk about. So I did do an interview with Bobby Valentine. I did do a story as a freelancer recently. About a month ago, I talked to Bobby. So let's listen to a quick excerpt from that interview.
You know, when they started talking about this and as we approached this possible 50-50 thing, I was thinking that his swing, he doesn't really swing for hits enough to get on first base enough to steal bases. But I miscalculated going into the season how much he would draw walks partly because of the lineups and maybe matchups from guys hitting and guys on the mound and who they'd rather face, but also because he has such a good idea of how to go about getting hitters out because he's a pitcher as well. What have you seen with maturity as a hitter and then in getting those stolen bases?
Well, I've only seen him the last few years, and you know, you said something about not having ability to get singles. I mean, I think he's just a great hitter. It's not like he's a power hitter or a stolen base threat when he comes up. He just in the box, he's an exceptional hitter. I saw him do things with the Angels, a team that I've been following here the last few years, that I haven't seen many hitters ever do. With tough pitches, all parts of the strike zone, left-handers and right-handers, you know. And as far as stealing a base, well, he's faster than everyone else. He should be able to steal a base pretty easily, and he does. And he slides feet first all the time, which is another credit to his genius.
You played baseball. I always played basketball, Bobby. I can never hit the darn baseball. I don't know how guys do it. They're pretty amazing. But you played, so you tell me what you think about a guy who does all this kind of stuff. And we still haven't seen the limits because obviously he's not pitching this year.
Well, I don't know how to describe it other than what I said. He's a genius. Everyone else in the major league are like they're like concert pianists, and he's like Beethoven. You know, he writes the music and plays it at the same time. He sees things that you know, other guys don't see, and he's very, very competitive. He enjoys the competition, which is another wonderful thing about him, that you know, he likes beating the throw to second base. He likes hitting the other pitcher's tough pitch. He likes driving in runs. He likes all that competition. And that's just another notch in his belt.
Wow, okay, very cool.
So, as I said, on Friday, Japan time, Ohtani hits three homers, steals two bases. He knocked in 10 runs, scored four times, made the lineup card for both teams. Signed a bunch of balls, signed some jerseys, called balls and strikes, and parked a few cars before the game. then he made history.
He also fed the dog.
That's right. got decoy some grub. 51-51 is what he finished with this. He came out of this game with. It's incredible. This is the same stadium at which he struck out Mike Trout to end the WBC in 2023. So it's a magical place for him, magical moment. I just love what Bobby said about, you know, he's writing the music. I mean, you know, it takes a lot to be a concert pianist. There aren't many out there, but Ohtani's not just above the concert pianist. He's writing the music, all the music, and they simply just play. What do you think about this whole situation? I think he locked up a Hall of Fame spot immediately.
I think he was already there.
But he's certainly, he's going to get his own wing if he has
a... Yeah, pretty much. They're going to have to rename it part of it after him. Probably pay his sponsor. He's probably New Balance Wing or something.
Yeah.
So the... I also did an interview on, it seems all of the interviews I do on BBC World News are about Shohei Ohtani. I did an interview with them when he signed his contract. And then I did an interview yesterday and they asked how people were receiving it in Japan. I said, nobody's noticing, it's humdrum. And no, but I did write, in fact, I haven't published it on my blog yet, but I have written, it's going up today. It's a fairly lengthy piece about how Shohei Ohtani, something occurred to me walking with the wife, I'll make it really short. You know, what's so special about him? You know, he's just really big and strong and blah, 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 and so on. I said, it's not that. It's that this guy has an extreme ability to... I don't want to say shut out distractions, but to put them in a place, you know, put them in the places where he can deal with them, which is not when he's preparing for a game, not when he's doing his training, you know, then it's everything he's doing. He's extremely, he's human. So I'm not saying he doesn't hear the distractions, but he might be as good as anybody on the planet at focusing on the here and now and staying, concentrating on what he's doing, he wants to do at that instant. Because I think that goes to the heart of his core skills, which are pitching and hitting, and the ability to be really in the moment and getting the maximum amount out of your effort. Is if you're not worried about other things, you know, then you can take, and I can't do that. And people said, how to think about how the season started. First day, you know, the second day of the season. Oh, and your best friend and your interpreter and your personal assistant's been stealing millions of dollars every year to cover his gambling habit. And now you're under suspicion. And people said, boy, that's going to really mess up his season. Yeah, it kind of messed it up for about a week.
Yeah. Because remember, he had a slow start with the home runs. If he had been Shohei Ohtani that first week, he'd have 55, 56 right now. And they'd be talking about 60, 50 or something like that. So, yeah.
Right. So we had that. And it reminded me of September 2nd, 2018. That was the day the Los Angeles Angels told him, we recommend you have Tommy John surgery. And okay, he went out and 3 for 3 with 2 home runs and a stolen base.
Yeah.
And you know, who does that? And the answer is Shohei Ohtani. That's what he does. So I think all the bit about, oh, he's chasing 50-50 and this, I really doubt he was chasing 50-50. We were chasing 50-50. Shohei Ohtani was just driving the bus and letting us
trying to win baseball games.
Yeah, exactly. He was just doing what he wanted to do. And taking us along for the ride.
Yep. Well, so I wrote, in my piece that I wrote for the freelance site, I said, you know, they brought him in this year as a two-way player, and he has been. He has been attacking by air and by ground.
Oh.
Because he just changed his game a little bit. He's not pitching, but he's certainly...
Well, that's the thing, of course, this year is that because he's not pitching, It's like the stolen bases, I think, are really the difference, because sure. when he's sure. pitching, you know, he's going, do I really want to, you know, my legs are tired enough. So, but that was the thing. And as you said, Miami was special. And I was thinking about that on Wednesday. Oh, excuse me. I was thinking about that on Thursday, when part of the story was he didn't throw 30 pitches, and he didn't do a 30 pitch bullpen session, because he hasn't actually done a real bullpen session, because he hasn't been what I say that he was playing hard catch from the mound, in that he wasn't trying to throw strikes. He was just playing catch basically, but he was playing catch with, 95 mile an hour fastballs in the same bullpen where he warmed up that whole WBC final from about the fifth inning. So
yeah, the mic drop moment. Yeah. Pretty awesome stuff. Pretty awesome yep. stuff. Let's make a two seam transition. And what day was this? Thursday. I'm going to call this section Up in Smoke. Thursday. Okay. What's that?
Okay, I'm with you.
You like to stop dragging my heart around better. All right, well, that's fine.
Yeah, well, I'm good. You go
I'm
for
good.
It.
Okay. On Thursday, Chunichi skipper Kazuyoshi Tatsunami, it was announced that he would quietly leave the position of manager of the Dragons. And like I said, I was at work. I was telling Jim before we went on mic, I said this story came over, and it was fairly early in the day, way, way before games were going to start or anything like that. Maybe even before noon.
Oh really? We got it at night. We didn't get that thing till late at night.
On Thursday?
Might've been Wednesday.
Okay. Maybe on Wednesday you got it, but he gave it to me on Thursday.
Okay.
On morning. And so I said, all right, well, that's fine. Do you want to do a story? And he said, nah. And I thought to myself, oh, yeah, you're right. The guy who's finished in last place 3 years in a row, basically, quits. I mean, that's not news.
Well, yeah, here's the thing. Yeah, here's the thing. Okay. The manager who says, I'm going to step down to take responsibility for the team's lack of results after two really bad seasons that were not his walk year, but does step down for results in the final year of his contract. What does that tell
you? Stepping down?
Yeah, that's sort of like, yeah, there was only, you know, he had two doors and both of them were exits.
#I hate.
I like that.
Although we,
one know, was get out and the other one was get the heck out, right?
Pretty much. Yeah, Monty Hall would have made that really easy on everyone. Okay, so, I like to contrast, and somebody did. I look at the drafts that my colleagues write, and I did notice that there was a huge backlog of people writing about the Dragons who were basically, you know, they've been sharpened in the writers who have to deal with the Dragons on a daily basis have basically been sharpening the cutlery for about the last 2.5 years.
Waiting. Shoot, man. I was doing it the first day when he said guys can't color their hair and all this other stuff. I'm like, what does that have to do about baseball?
Right.
So, yeah, I was not happy from
right.
day one.
But
so.
The point, the whole thing, I mean, once they saw the stuff, like, you know, as you said, like, you know, get off the team, go back to Nagoya and then trade them, you know, and then trade people like crazy. You know, it's like trade people who he has a bad impression about. And if, as I've said, you know, he's. I personally like Tatsunami. I find him a very affable, fun guy, generally lighthearted. But as a manager, he tried to channel, he tried to bring back the ghost of Senichi Hoshino, and he only got the scary part.
He only got the bones.
You know, all he got was the scary part. I'm gonna scream and holler.
Yeah.
But Hoshino was so much more than that. He wanted the image. He wanted the team to look like they had a tough manager. And the big contrast, which I think is partially undeserved, but partially so, is the difference between him and Tsuyoshi Shinjo. And I'm not singing Tsuyoshi Shinjo's praises, but when the day he was hired, Shinjo. I thought, boy, what a dumb move. But I also thought that Shinjo is a guy who can unleash talent because he's not one of these guys who'll say, like Tatsunami did, you brushed your teeth wrong. Professional baseball players don't do it like that. I don't want you on my team. You know, just find obscure reasons not to like people because they don't do A, B, and C. You know, they don't do tie their shoelaces right or something. You know, that's Japanese pro baseball. Do everything the way I tell you to. That's old 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s style.
Yeah.
And some players do not develop because coaches just don't like how some modern players live. They don't the way they walk.
I got you.
And Shinjo wasn't going to play that game, and I thought that was the silver lining in the Shinjo cloud. Yeah. So, and Tatsunami, there weren't no silver linings there. Oh, well, I can't say there's none, but I can't find them.
Yeah, they're very thin. So someone asked me, John, how do you feel about Tatsunami being out at Chunichi? And my reply was that I'm considering applying for the job. I said jokingly, but seriously, I'm just disappointed. The whole experience, I was excited about him coming in. We had heard that he was going to be the manager. I thought this is a good idea in the first place. He's a really smart guy. I've heard him talk doing the color analyst jobs and gigs on the radio and TV, and he just breaks down the game so plainly and so cleanly, and the thinking and everything is there, and that's going to transfer to the players. That didn't happen. It didn't seem like he was, even in losing as much as they did, he still would never take chances and do things out of the off the beaten path and unorthodox things. It just would always be by the book and just hope for the best. And he would change the players around and, you know, essentially shuffle the chairs on the deck of the Titanic and enjoy it and tell us, well, you know, when they did win games, he would always say, well, we should have scored more runs before that, or we, you know, I wish we didn't have to struggle scoring runs before we did that. And I'm like, dude, you know, that's a given. That's your team. That they take on the personality of the manager, and apparently you're not showing enough personality, or you're not imparting enough wisdom upon them to transfer that into game situations. They swing at bad pitches. I saw it tonight. They won this game. Yes, since they announced that he's leaving, all of a sudden the guys are hitting. And did you notice that?
I did.
They're scoring runs like crazy. Now, part of it is that they're at Jingu. Part of it is that they're playing the Swallows and their pitching staff. But even that earlier in the season didn't seem to impact them very much. But they scored 7 runs tonight. I think they had close to that last night, if not the same. So anyway, to wrap it all up, it was a very disappointing experience. And I started wondering, okay, who is a good replacement for Tatsunami? Do they go outside the organization? Or do they stay in that dank, scary basement, you know, the kind of basement where there's a dead possum and it's roach infested and nobody goes down in there because the funk is real. The funk is the kind you can't wash off.
Well, can you get more graphic? I think you're not scaring enough of the children yet.
Yeah. Okay. Well, my initial thought was Kazuhiro Wada is there. I thought that's an option. But I did, the story I read about Tatsunami leaving suggested that Hirokazu Ibata, the former Dragons and possible Hall of Famer and Samurai Japan manager, might be in line to become the manager.
Yeah, so that's interesting. Yes. I think he's shown pretty much what we heard him as an analyst, which is he really knows his stuff. He's very calm, very smart, and understated. Well, of course, Ibata is going to be understated because he doesn't say anything if he doesn't have to.
I thought that's a good idea.
I think that's a good idea. And I've heard a couple of others which are kind of interesting. I had heard about Hatsuhiko Tsuji.
Okay.
The farmer
who did manage.
In fact, these two were almost uttered in the same breath. He was the last Dragons farm manager to win a Western League pennant. And now, apparently, I don't know if they've won it yet, but Kazuki Inoue, who's another guy I really like, I always enjoyed talking with him, is on his way to leading the Dragons minor league team to their first pennant in, you know, in 15 years.
Okay. So
those guys, and I hadn't heard Ibata, but that wouldn't surprise me. I know the Dragons, Tsuji might be a hard sell, because the Dragons former Players Association believes that the Dragons' role is to provide jobs for former players.
Okay.
Although he was a former farm team manager, he never coached for them, except he never played for them. So that would be the one strike against him. But he's a terrific manager. And I do hope they keep, I don't know if he wants to stay on, but I sure hope they keep Akira Otsuka as the pitching coach. I think he's done. He's done a fantastic job.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. So there are lots of options out there. We'll see. I don't know if they need a big Bossian kind of personality, but that would be nice to have in Junichi, actually. Someone with some personality, with some pizzazz, with some flair, with not maybe like a big boss, but in that vein, just to get them out of this rut, because they've just had a bunch of managers. You could almost interchange them all. They're all calm, boring. You know, Yoda was Tsuyoshi Yoda was kind of an understated guy.
He was a little, I don't really get Yoda. I mean, he and I talked a bit, but I don't really get him. He was a fun guy, but I don't know. The only guy they've actual personality was probably Shige Kazumori because of the hair.
Yes. Not just because of the hair, because of that guy. He's just that guy.
He is that guy. And I get that, but it didn't really matter, because the Dragons are going to be underfunded. The development is going to be mediocre because the front office, the owners don't want to pay nothing for anything that's gonna, you know, for more games or more better equipment or you name it, they ain't gonna pay it.
Okay, but I mean, they're not that far away. Yeah,
they're not that far away. They're more or less as in the same boat as the Yakult Swallows. They're also a poor team, and it's largely. I think Tatsunami's issue was largely. And think how bad they've been when they got a gift in, say, a Hosokawa.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they got the best player. They got the best player in the active player draft. You know, they got basically their best player was given to them for nothing.
True.
And they were still terrible.
Terrible. Yeah.
So, yeah. And the thing with Tatsunami and the comparison with Tsuyoshi Shinjo is that Tatsunami would he was a traditional manager, which is show me something now or you're toast. And players would come up and they'd fail. And I think another 3 weeks on the farm taking extra swings is what you need.
I mean,
they got players with tremendous, they've got players with some promise who Tatsunami more or less crushed.
Agreed. I it was a complete failure. One other guy whose name didn't come up, but I saw him on the bench tonight, and he has personality for sure, and that's former Giants catcher Kohei Oda.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's got a lot of personality.
He does have a lot of personality. I think he wants that job like he wants a hole in the head.
Sure, but he's there already. All he has to do is slide over into the big chair. So I don't know what they're going to do. It'll be interesting to see how they go about it.
I think Kazuhiro Wada also wants that job like a hole in the head. That's why.
Well, like I said, I will send my name in. I'll take the job.
They might not
want me, but I can't do any worse. If I just let the players go out there and do what they want, I can't do any worse because there's no further you can go down.
No, you let the coaches, so. You know, you do what The Hiromitsu, I think the Hiromitsu Ochiai's big success. I mean, people, you know, he was good at spotting some talent. You know, if he saw it, it was there. He wasn't one of those guys who made mistakes, like saying, you know, like saying this guy with no talent has talent. Mm-hmm. He didn't see everybody's talent, but if he saw it, it was there. You know, he wasn't mistaken. He was rarely mistaken. He was really sharp. But I think his real talent was the team willing to spend a ton of money was one. And there was
not so a talent, but yeah, okay.
No, but they got, you know, they brought in free agents and they brought in high priced players who were out of contract with other teams. So that was one. And the other thing was he let the players play and he let the coaches coach. Now, yes. The coaches all wanted to coach for him at first because it was a challenge. You know, he was a tough, you know, this is your job. You do it. You do it any way you want, but you do it. And he went through coaches. You know, he weeded out a lot of guys who weren't that good, you know, who weren't up to his standards. But in the meantime, he just let them do their jobs. And that was the antithesis of Kazuyoshi Tatsunami. So I think that was his thing. Now, if you know, they get both of those things, they get a manager with talent and they get money. Well, geez, we'll have another golden era again.
Well, I think they just need to start with the manager who can get the players. I think they have a lot of talent. I think they have a lot of guys who can play. I just don't think it was put together right and it wasn't motivated right. But we got to move on. We will see what they do. That'll be something fun to watch. In the off season, let's go to fielding questions. All right, so Patrick, you've been on deck for a while. Thank you for hanging out there with your, you know, got the donut on the bat, got the spray can.
I'm surprised you haven't been called out for our team batting out of order.
But Patrick from Northern California, your area, Jim. So that's
correct.
That's nice. I don't know what city, but somewhere in Northern California. And he says, "Hey guys, I've been listening to you guys for about a year. Love all the English MPB content you provide for us here in the English-speaking world. I've been watching MPB for about 2 years, Go Fighters, and have started to get my father into it this season. We are from NorCal, so it's easy to sell him on a league where everyone loves the Giants." I don't know how I feel about that, Mr. Patrick.
Okay.
All right, let me finish.
Okay, let's stop there.
So he asked me a question the other day that I couldn't answer, and since you guys have been around, I thought maybe you would know. Do the stadiums in MPB have any ground rules like here in the U.S. with MLB? It's one of the most fascinating parts about baseball, and I know from hearing the podcast that each stadium has its own quirks and design, so I figure there must be something. What can you tell us? Thanks again, as always. Jim.
Well, I think, let's start with two, because I think those are the relevant ones. First of all, basically, any ball that hits the ceiling is in play in fair territory. Okay, so that's rule number one. So that goes for all the domes. Rule number two is I can't speak of other domes, but I can only speak about Tokyo Dome. If a ball in fair territory hits anything suspended from the ceiling, it is a home run.
Yeah, now that's the one that I wasn't sure about. I had heard something about it, but I thought that the ball has to hit something suspended.
Oh, it might be in the outfield.
When it has a trajectory that says was a home run.
There's no judgment on that. If it hits a light, there are a couple of lights. There are lights. Now they've rearranged the lights because of the LEDs are more powerful. I don't even know if they still have lights suspended from the ceiling anymore. But the lights, they used to have a bank of lights in left and a bank of lights in right that were suspended. And they were suspended just in front of the wall, they were suspended over the outfield, but maybe if you had dropped them in front of the wall, they would have been about 10 or 15 feet in front of the wall. Gotcha. And they had they do have speakers and things. And if you hit them, it is essentially a home run. I might be in the outfield, but I think if you hit it in the infield, it's also a home run. That's
unless someone catches it. Yeah, if it hits something in the ceiling
Hits anything from suspended in the ceiling, there's no catching.
Suspended. Yeah, okay.
If it hits the ceiling panel and falls down, it is in play, can be caught for an out. Nigel Wilson, who played for the Nippon Ham Fighters and Kintetsu Buffaloes, my first day I met Nigel Wilson, he was arguing with Toshimasa Shimada, who was then the international director of the Fighters. He was annoyed that he lost a home run because he hit the ceiling above the light in right field.
At Tokyo Dome.
And it was caught for an out. And he said, last year I hit the light and it was a home run. This year I hit it higher than the light and it's an out. And Toshimasa Shimada, who went on to become essentially the team's chief executive, said, well, you know the rules here, guy. Them's the rules. You know, it doesn't matter what you think about it or where the ball goes. Those are the rules. Anyway, so that's Tokyo Dome. You hit things that are hanging from the ceiling, you get a home run. If you hit the ceiling, it's in play. And if you're Shohei Ohtani and you hit the ball into a ceiling panel and it does not come out, you get a ground rule double, because he did that against the Netherlands in November 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the other one is Osaka Dome, and no, I'm not going to try to guess what all the rules are. Osaka Dome is weird because it has these concentric rings. What they're for, I'm not even going to go into it. It's a long story. I don't think anybody even remembers. But anyway, the stadium has these rings that sometimes balls will fly into that are suspended from the ceiling. If they come off the ring, they're in play. Some of the rings, if they hit it in fair territory, they are home. If they go in fair territory, they are home runs. In others, they are foul balls and out of play.
Some of the rings, yes. Lord of the Rings.
I know.
Oh, Lord, the rings.
Oh, yeah, indeed. So those ones are tricky. And I see sometimes people scratching for their... That's the place where the ground rules are really tough. Otherwise, they're all pretty much the same. The parks tend to be pretty easy. Hit it over the line, it's a home run.
Yeah, I do like that. I mean, they're quirky things. I think before we had replay, one of the things that used to drive me nuts about some of these ballparks is the fact that a lot of the fences in the outfield, either there's a chain link fence above the actual wall.
A
screen fence that the fans cannot stick their hands into the field or over the field of play to interfere. So you don't have these, this should have been a home run situations because the fans cannot interfere. And I like that. I think that MLB should pick up on that in some respects.
Well, we did have one of those once.
A situation, and there still are at Tokyo Dome. Some people in some areas can get to the wall and interfere. Sure. They just don't do it. They're well behaved.
Well, the Hanshin Tigers about 30 years ago, the Hanshin Tigers lost a home run because their hitter hit it into one of their cheering group's flag that was waving. And the ball hit the flag and then fell into the stands that was flying over the outfield. You know, it was waving over the outfield. The ball hit the flag and the motion of the flag picked the ball up and deposited in the outfield stands. And the Tigers were fairly upset that the ball was, I think it was called interference. And
that's,
I don't
just
know
a lot
how
of
was...
flap, man.
Yes. Well,
but yeah, so I do like the fact that the fans can't reach over and interfere. Home run. We have this Escon Field in Hokkaido that has that deep center field kind of tricky wall situation going on out there where there's a little crevice and a corner. Mm-hmm. And I like that. And I think it was Shun Mizutani earlier this season who hit a ball that actually went over the fence, and Tsuyoshi Shinjo, the manager, did not ask for a review, and the umpires, who should have actually automatically reviewed it if it was on a home run, they didn't review, and it was actually a home run, and that would have been his first, the first of his career. So then he came up in his next at bat and hit a home run that was clearly over the spot, the almost the exact same spot in the outfield out there where that little crevice is. But they're pretty straightforward in most of the ballparks, and I do like that, and I do like that the even though they have these lagoons and what else?
Terraces.
Paris.
Well, the home run. I forget what Rakuten has a word for theirs, but I can't remember what it is.
You know,
they actually moved the seats in.
Yeah.
When that wow, you know, they've all got all these. They all have pretty much all have field seats now, and they got this and they got that. The stadiums have all become quite different, which I like that. When
it's
I
good.
Came here,
gotta have
the parks were considered they had to be symmetrical, and there were people who were upset when Mazda Stadium in Hiroshima was built because it wasn't symmetrical. And they're like going, oh, that's not fair. Well, nothing's, you know, it's, you know, you know.
You want some fair, go to the store and buy some. Get out of here.
Exactly. You know, it's fun. Baseball's supposed to be fun.
Well, it is fun, and we're going to enjoy watching the fun that these next couple weeks bring us. And especially the Bay Stars, I think they end their season with the Dragons at in Nagoya, and they've been owning the Dragons. So if they have a chance at all to get in the playoffs, they're going to be set up in really good situation to finish out the season. So it's going to be fun. Thank you very much, Patrick, for the question. Tony,
yep.
We'll get to you as soon as we can. Anyone else who has a question, hit us up on x.com at JBW Podcast. With the hashtag High Heat, send questions via email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. You can go to the Facebook page and leave us a message there. Look for us on iTunes. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. Submit your questions with hashtag High Heat and listen for an answer in an upcoming episode.